From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
An attempt by the U.S. to capture Belarus that began in earnest running up to last year's presidential election in that country failed. We're going to talk about that and some recent developments with Mark Sloboda in Moscow. Mark, welcome back. It's a pleasure to finally be having a regular conversation with you again.
And, hey, Don, it's always an honor and a pleasure to be on CPR. Thanks for having me.
Our honor and pleasure also. So we'll start with this story in CNN's website. Ukraine spies tried to ensnare Russians with a fake website, money, and a sting. And they were a lot less objective than I just read it, actually, with all kinds of editorializing just in the headline. So why don't you talk about the incident they're referring to and give us some of the skinny on how it's been playing out.
Yeah. Okay. So, Don, this was an incident last year, the end of July, and it was in Belarus, and they were getting ready for presidential elections there, which were later held, and then the results were contested, and the protests that erupted, and the U.S. and the EU then basically declared this pro-Western candidate that was on the ballot should have been the real winner as far as they're concerned, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, a pro-Western liberal housewife.
Another color revolution,
right? They set her up as their president of Belarus.
Right.
That's John Guaido type figure.
Right. As another color revolution attempt, basically, that they
it
had
was
rolled
color,
out.
Color revolution.
Attempt. They had the people in the street and everything.
Yes. And the same thing, amazingly, again, how many of those figures, because most of the leaders of that color revolution were former Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty people.
Right.
Which means they were employees of the U.S. government.
Right. Of CIA particularly.
Yeah, propaganda station, right? Which is hilarious, of course. They were the ones involved in, they're the advisors to Tikhanovskaya. They're the ones who set up all the Telegram and other social media apps that were used to coordinate everything. You know, they're behind it, thick and thin. But before all of that happened, there was an incident right before the elections where a group of 33 Russian security contractors, mercenaries, if you will, right? If they're ours, they're security contractors. If they're someone else's, then they're mercenaries. That's
right,
the
way the
convention goes. But there were 33 Russian security contractors who were in Belarus. They were arrested in Minsk. And it was claimed by the Belarusian president, Lukashenko, that they were, first, that they were terrorists trying to launch a terrorist attack to destabilize the elections, and then that they were in Minsk, that changed slightly to that they were starting a color revolution attempt to overthrow him and put in a more pro-Russian figure. Because, it's no secret that Putin and Lukashenko, don't actually really get along very much at all. And Lukashenko has been playing Russia and the West off each other for his own advantage for decades now. But it very quickly emerged, and it was reported both in Ukrainian media and Russian media that this actually isn't what was going on at all, that this was a sting operation. A setup by the Ukrainian intelligence under their comedian president Volodymyr Zelensky of SBU.
Sure.
And this was an elaborate, really kind of far-fetched sting. They reached out to a number of Russian security contractors, and they lured them to Minsk on the promise of a lucrative security job. That they were going to Minsk, and through then on to Turkey, and then a series of flights to bring them to Venezuela, where they would be guarding oil fields in Venezuela for the Russian oil company Rosneft, was to have some investments there. And they were going to be paid $5,000 a month, which is like double what the usual rate for that type of security work here is. This was reported almost immediately in the Russian-Ukrainian media. It was kind of far-fetched. I mean, does anyone really believe that, you know, some 30 grunts? I mean, and these are like U.S. security contractors. Most of them are ex-military. You know, they're good for things like security work.
Right.
But they're not so good for overthrowing a government with a, right, with a fairly substantial military and intelligence apparatus, right, or for staging a color revolution. Or, you know, it's intelligence. Right. These guys are grunts.
Well, Zelensky is a comedian, okay? So,
but there was political tension at the time,
yeah,
because despite the way the Belarusian election was reported in the West, and, you know, there's no question in mind that it was rigged and everything, but it wasn't a pro-Western liberal that was the, you know, the majority, the candidate the majority of Belarusians would have preferred to vote against Lukashenko. And there was another figure in the election, in the run-up to the election, who was campaigning, Viktor Babariko, who was a head of the Belarusian branch of Gazprom Bank. He was a Belarusian citizen working in a Belarusian branch of a Russian company. And he was seen as a figure outside the political establishment of Lukashenko, but pro-Russian. And I won't comment on how actually pro-Russian he was.
Right.
But
seen that.
He had huge rallies in support. There was a lot of support. And there was all kinds of tensions at the time, and this was all deliberately being stoked up by, you know, the West whispering in Lukashenko's ear in Ukraine as well, that Putin wanted to get rid of Lukashenko and put a more pro-Russian figure in there, when actually they're the ones who wanted to get rid of Lukashenko and were, you know, plotting against him.
Right.
So these security contractors were lured there. Actually, the way the plot is now emerging, according to these Ukrainian intelligence or former intelligence officials who have come forward to CNN, the original plot was just to get them to fly from Belarus to Turkey,
right,
and then fake someone sick planted on the plane to force the plane down in Ukraine,
right,
and arrest them there.
Right,
because a number of them some of them were Russian, Belarusian dual citizens, and some of them were Russian, Ukrainian dual citizens,
right,
and they had fought in Donbass, and
right,
they wanted a show trial,
right,
to put some people in Donbass on trial, right?
Right. Yep.
For political reasons.
That's the political cover for doing color revolution in Belarus. I mean, that's they're recruiting people to sting here and arrest there and have a show trial.
Yeah, that didn't work out because the way the flights were, because of the pandemic, there were no direct flights from Moscow. So instead, they fixed on this thing to fly them to Minsk, and then you know, report them to the Belarusian authorities there that they were there to right, overthrow the Belarusian government. And this was to split ties, you know, to really create a lot of tension between Russia and Belarus,
right,
before the election,
right,
so that when they stage the color revolution after the election,
right,
that Russia and Belarus would already be on the outs and not in a position to
right,
provide as much assistance or so. That was, you know, probably what they believed. You know,
right,
you have to remember that Russia and Belarus are actually part of a union state.
That's right.
And have been for decades. And it's not as advanced as the EU, but it's about, you know, I don't want to say half, but like 30-40% of the way there, and was supposed to go further, but Lukashenko has been dragging his feet for a long time.
That's a separate question, because culturally, socially, you know, in almost every other way, and ethnically, it's much more integrated than the EU.
Yeah,
Belarus and Russia.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So, Yeah, so that was the plan, to ruin, you know, to really make the governments in Minsk and the Kremlin not trust each other,
right
in advance of this color revolution attempt. And at the time, this was, you know, reported quite differently in the West than it was being reported in Russia. And, you know, in here and in Ukraine, actually, in the independent media in Ukraine that doesn't exist anymore, by the way, that has been by their president. It was reported that this was a sting by the SBU. And now, a year later, CNN is picking up the story again. Obviously, it didn't work, right? The Kremlin managed to convince Lukashenko that they weren't really behind this. They got the guys back. And then when the election was over, and actually this pro-Russian Viktor Babarko had never been allowed to run. He was imprisoned on politicized charges before it. And so the only real opposition figure on the ballot was this, you know, liberal housewife, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, that the West has proclaimed their president. Polling actually done by Chatham House, the British Royal Institute for International Affairs, they did some online survey just a couple of months ago in Belarus to find out which candidate in that election people actually supported. And Lukashenko had something like 25% support in the country. This liberal housewife, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, you know, Svetlana Guaido, had 4% support.
Right. Yeah, six times as much, yeah.
A few points higher, I think it was about 28%, was this pro-Russian Viktor Babarko. So the Belarusian people, a significant amount of them want change, right? The results of this poll were only online and only from big cities, so it's actually not fully representative. Lukashenko actually probably has more support than that, and they actually admit that in the methodology from the survey. But let's say Lukashenko might have had a plurality and they rigged it so his numbers were much better than they were. Or maybe if Babarko had been allowed to run, the Belarusian people might want change, but they don't want a pro-Western liberal in there. They want someone who will respect their ties with Russia, because there is less of a difference between the people in Belarus and Russia, even in many ways, than there are between the people of Russia and Eastern Ukraine.
Or New York and New Jersey, really.
So anyway, CNN, the election went forward without Babarko on it. Lukashenko won, according to official results. They were probably inflated, but there's no question that he had a lot more support, you know, according to British own, you know, Royal Institute of International Affairs own polling, than this Tikhanovskaya. So, you know, that makes it clear that this is all part of a color revolution attempt, and that, you know, she didn't really have the support, you know, to proclaim that she should be the president of Belarus.
Let me put a point
CNN
on that.
Picked this up.
Okay, go ahead.
A year later now, because they have sources supposedly in Ukrainian intelligence, anonymous, of course, that ratted this whole thing out and said, yes, it actually was an SBU sting operation from the very beginning.
Oops.
But they say they also had the green light, plus assistance, financing, technical assistance, advice from the CIA to do this.
Oh, no. U.S. meddling in an election?
Big surprise. Big surprise, right? Now, the U.S. government is denying this.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that they weren't involved. They knew about it, admitting that it was a sting operation to frame Russians by the Ukrainian intelligence services, but saying that they weren't actively involved. That's you know, their cover story, of course. I don't know that anyone actually believes that. But it is undoubtedly now that it was a sting operation by the Ukrainian intelligence. And I think we can safely assume that the CIA had their hands in it too. The amazing thing is, this was all a really far-fetched, ham-handed thing. Like, you just believe that these guys were there to help overthrow the Ukrainian government? These guys just security threats. They're murdered. It just was not a believable story. Even the pro-Western media, you know, usually funded by the West, you know, the liberal media in Russia, even they were like, yeah, this probably, no, not really. no one who's serious, who isn't just a blatant anti-Russian propagandist, no. You know, if you're against the Russian government from a liberal perspective, but you have an ounce, at least, of intellectual credibility, no one believed that story at the time. That's why it was kind of all ridiculous from the really beginning, and like I said, Lukashenko was eventually convinced, and you know, the break in Russian Belarusian relations didn't happen that could have happened, that was intended to happen. But it just goes to show you the lengths that the U.S., the West, and of course their now Ukrainian client state in Kiev is willing to go to try to split off other countries that are Russia's allies from them, and with the intent of geopolitically flipping them,
right,
and consolidating more space, more NATO members, you know, or de facto NATO members with NATO troops right on the Russian border.
Well, okay, so in terms of the lengths that they would go to, on the one hand, the numbers that you quoted before from this British poll, okay, if you aggregate them, you know, pair them one or another, 52% of Belarusians polled by the British want not an American proxy, basically a pro-Western, pro-EU candidate, and 4% do want it, with the others apparently not mentioned in there. And meanwhile, if you aggregate the 28% and 4%, 32% preferred someone other than Lukashenko by 32 to 24, which is, you know, 8 to 6, basically, or 4 to 3. So whatever it is, none of that militates for backing the candidate that had 4%, some sort of democratic choice. And then if you go to Wikipedia in terms of the lengths they'll go to, with that information in mind, and look at how they characterize this, it's like this is written in Langley. This is the official narrative here from the U.S. on the internet, and it sounds like it was written by, you know, Radio Free Europe or something.
Well, that's, you know, essentially who was behind the whole thing.
Right,
so that's not,
right.
That, you know, so many people in of the top Belarusian opposition were former Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and a lot of them were former Radio Free Europe, Liberty. There's also an EU equivalent specifically targeting Belarus. A number of people had been employed at both places. And then also a lot of them went from Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty to the Atlantic Council, which should surprise no one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is NATO's unofficial think tank propaganda arm.
Was last year or the year before, I was with Cindy Sheehan and about 100 other people, 150 other people. We did like a Stations of the Cross of Empire in Washington, and one of the stops was the Atlantic Council. And while we were outside chanting and carrying signs, the whole lot of those people, all those tough guys on the international stage, were looking out the second floor window at us, scared out of their wits. And I had the honor and privilege and joy of giving them the finger from the street in person.
on behalf of all the non-militant Atlanticist people in the world, I thank God.
That's right. Yep. So anyway, so okay, so now where are things at?
Well, now, because of the failed color revolution attempt, and like, I don't love Lukashenko. I don't know, you know, in Russia, they kind of half sardonically, we call him Batka, which is uncle.
Uh-huh.
That's what a lot of people call him in Belarus, too. He's a cunning beast, and he has played Russia and the West off each other for years, but he no longer can cast those checks because of, you know, the concerted color revolution attempt, the sanctions. He can't go to the West anymore. So he is stuck with Russia as supporting his government. And the position of Putin and the others is basically that, okay, we'll help you stay in power and stabilize the country now, but you're going to make progress on the Union state with us. You're after dragging your feet for decades. That was promised. That will more firmly economically and legally tie Russia and Belarus together, right, which most Belarusians are in favor of,
right,
to a degree, right? They don't, right, want to lose their statehood, and that's, no, not something that is on the table. Again, this is more like an EU-type relationship just between two countries, and it's been going on for decades. But they said, okay, and you will we agree with you launching constitutional reforms, but after those constitutional reforms are passed, you should really step down. And, you know, we can help, support someone who would carry on or carry on in a different way, but we really don't want you there. Right? We don't, right, trust you. You've lost the faith of too many of the Belarusian people and us. And, if you want to promote a successor, that's fine. But pro-Russian candidates like Babarko actually have to be able to run. We'll provide a way for you to retire with a bit of dignity intact. You really need to leave within a year or two.
Right.
And I'm sure that he will try to drag that out as long as he can.
Hey, it's a good paying job.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's also got an ego, yeah, size. He probably wanted to set up a North Korean type regime with his teenage son taking over from, right, him. Russia is not into that kind of thing.
Yeah, no.
So, Russia will try to ensure that Belarus is stable. They want to see a change of government in Minsk, but they don't want it to be at the hands of a color revolution,
right,
that sees a pro-Western liberal figure who does not really have the support of a significant amount of the Belarusian people take power and geopolitically flip the country when most of the Belarusian people don't want to become, a base for NATO against what they see as a brother country.
I mean, take a look at Ukraine.
So many echoes of what happened in Ukraine.
Exactly.
But obviously they were much more successful there because there was particularly in West Ukraine, a lot more nationalists,
right,
call them ultranationalists, Banderite, right, fascists, right, that did have an extremely anti-Russian. But it's amazing. A number of these Belarusian opposition figures really also have pro-Nazi collaborator fascist views.
Yeah.
This Belarusian that was arrested, the flight that was forced between Greece and Lithuania, right, that carried this Belarusian oppositionist that was, depending on the version of events that happened, the plane did land in Minsk. How much the Belarusian government was actually involved in it is unclear. But this figure, this young guy that was arrested, it only emerged afterwards that he was actually involved in Azov. He had volunteered for this Ukrainian neo-Nazi outfit that was used in the attempt to conquer Donbass by, right, the new regime in Kiev in 2014, 2015, and they tried to, the Western media tried to say, oh, it wasn't true, or, oh, then he was only there as a journalist,
yeah, right,
and that gun in his hand, and he's not really a neo-Nazi, oh, yeah, he kind of is, and so on. And then it also emerged that another prominent figure that was being promoted by the Western media also turned out to have neo-Nazi, these far right views. And it's like, can't you guys actually find a real honest to God liberal support in these countries?
No.
Why do you have to keep embarrassing yourselves by backing these neo-Nazis? It really is amazing.
The last two honest to God liberal presidents we had, or two of the last three honest to God, quote unquote, liberal presidents we had, one of them they shot in the head. And the other one, they drove from office in disgrace.
Anyway, so yeah. Anyway, the end result of this is that it's actually to Russia's, because of the failure of this whole thing. Belarus has no options. Lukashenko has very limited options. And Belarus, instead of going further into the Western orbit or being geopolitically flipped, right, will now become almost irreversibly cemented in the Russian orbit.
Right. Yep. Yeah, I mean, look, the choice that these countries were presented with, essentially, is the one that, okay, do I marry the guy that I love, or do I let this guy pimp me out? Because those are the choices. With Russia, with integrating these countries with Russia, everybody's developing their economies together. Just as they start to mature onto the international scene and become a power along with China, or you end up in the EU, the young women in your country go off to au pair or prostitute in Western Europe and the United States. So many of them. I don't mean everybody, but large numbers come here thinking that there are opportunities for them, and the opportunities lie too often in those areas of being super exploited. And that's not how it plays out in Moscow if you go there from Minsk or from Kiev.
Well, it's not only how it plays out in Moscow. And speaking from, personal experience, my wife is Crimean. We have family there. We have lots of family in eastern Ukraine as well.
Right.
So all of these post-Soviet countries, they have very fragile geopolitical balance to play since the 1990s. And the U.S., the EU, NATO, they are attempting to draw these countries in when these countries have very significant portions of their population that don't want to be turned into anti-Russian bulwarks. Right. I mean, they're not against economic benefits, but they haven't seen any of those. Ukraine, since 2014, since the Maidan, backed by the West, seized power there, they have become the poorest country in Europe on a per capita basis, a GDP per capita basis, poorer than Moldova. The economy has crashed there. Why? Because Russia was their biggest straight state trading partner.
Right, yep.
Because during the Soviet Union, their economies were designed integrated. Right? And they don't really make anything that the EU wants,
right?
They do lots of agriculture, but the EU subsidizes its own farmers, for Christ's sake. Don't want many Ukrainian agriculture.
We make gas tanks, they only fit in Ladas. Yeah. We make windshields that only fit in Moskvus, or whatever the hell the other car is called, et cetera. Their economies were integrated. It was a whole.
So now you have economic cases, and you also have political and social chaos because, like I said, there is genuine splits in all of these countries. You usually have some percentage of the population, identity-wise, that leans to the West, and some equal or greater that leans towards Russia. And then you try to make these countries decide. And this is what the EU said with their EU association agreement to Kiev back in 2014.
13, 14.
It really was a neoliberal shock therapy diktat of nothing had been so extensive. It would have ripped the Ukrainian economy apart, privatized every state company, unemployed tens of millions of Ukrainians, and the government at the time, seen as pro-Russian, Yanukovych, but actually he was just pro-Eastern Ukrainian, meaning he didn't hate Russia, but he also didn't hate the EU, and he thought he was going to get tens of billions of dollars to ameliorate the effects of this neoliberal shock therapy.
Oops.
He wasn't given it.
That's right.
He said no, or at least no, not now, not under those terms, after he had been backing it for years, actually at the support, at the urging of Manafort, who had been close to him as an advisor. And when that happened, the EU, said, no, that's not acceptable. You are going to be with us now.
And do what you're told or else. We got to stop there, Mark, because we're out of time. But we can see what the outcome of all of that was for the people of Ukraine today. And I guess Belarus looked at that and said, no, not yet. We'll talk again next week. Maybe we can pick it up here.
Great.
Right, thank you, Mark. Take care of yourself.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Thank you. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.